Welcome back, everybody. Ready to dive deep into some more Exodus?
Always ready.
Awesome. So we're looking at chapters 33 and 34 today, picking up after that whole golden calf incident.
Yeah.
You know, the one where the Israelites decide to throw a giant party worshiping an idol?
Oh, yeah. While Moses is up on the mountain getting the Ten Commandments.
Talk about bad timing.
Yeah, talk about missing the memo.
Right. Like, hello? Anyone home? Anyway, it's a huge turning point in their story because now they have to deal with the consequences of their actions.
And Moses really steps up to the plate as their intercessor.
Big time. But, you know, to help us unpack all of this, we're going to be looking at some excerpts from Dr. John Oswalt's lectures on Exodus.
Oh, he's great.
He is. He just brings so much to the table with his insights. And honestly, I think you guys are going to love what he has to say about this section.
Yeah, Dr. Oswalt really does a fantastic job of highlighting the tension right from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, God reaffirms his promise to lead the Israelites to the promised land.
But he also makes it very clear that he won't actually physically go with them because of their rebellion.
Wait, hold on. Help me out here.
Sure.
God's not going with them. But didn't he just promise to lead them to the promised land?
He did.
That seems a little, I don't know, contradictory, don't you think?
It might seem that way at first glance, but what Dr. Oswalt really emphasizes is that God's presence, that intimate guiding presence, that can't coexist with unrepentant sin.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's kind of like trying to mix oil and water.
Yeah.
They just don't blend.
Okay, so it's not that God's breaking his promise.
No.
It's more like he's setting some boundaries.
Exactly. You could say that.
Yeah.
He's basically saying, look, I will absolutely honor my covenant, but you can't expect to just live in open rebellion and experience the fullness of my presence at the same time.
Got it.
He's drawing a very clear line in the sand.
I see.
And you know what? That principle, it applies just as much to us today as it did to the Israelites back then.
Totally. Okay, so how do the Israelites react to this?
Right.
I'm guessing they don't throw a party.
Not exactly. The text tells us that they respond with mourning, stripping off all their ornaments as a sign of repentance.
Mm.
But Dr. Oswalt digs even deeper into the meaning of this action.
Yeah.
You see, he points out that mourning, it's not just about, you know, feeling sad.
Right.
It's about truly recognizing the gravity of their actions.
That makes sense.
And the pain they've caused.
Right. Okay.
And then the shedding of the ornaments.
Yeah.
That's like a tangible expression of that inner grief, that repentance.
Wait, remind me what these ornaments were.
Yeah. I mean, just think back to the golden calf incident for a sec.
Yeah.
Remember how they used their jewelry, you know, their earrings and things
here
to fashion that idol?
Yeah.
Well, now they're taking off all their fancy accessories, everything.
Oh, wow.
Dr. Oswalt actually suggests that it's a deliberate echo of that rebellion.
I see.
A symbolic stripping away of all the things that had become a distraction from their relationship with God.
Oh, that's powerful. So it's like they're saying,
we messed up big time, and we're getting rid of anything that might tempt us to stray again.
Exactly. It's a powerful visual, isn't it?
Yeah. But you know what the real question is?
What's that?
The question that Dr. Oswalt poses is this. What are our ornaments today?
That's a good question.
What are the things that we're clinging to? You know, maybe it's possessions or status or even certain beliefs that are hindering our own walk with God.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a thought-provoking question.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to have to think about that one.
Me too.
Now, there's this one detail about the Tent of Meeting that I've always found a little confusing.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of pops up here seemingly out of nowhere.
Right.
Before the tabernacle is even built. It's always thrown me off a bit.
It's one of those passages that can make you scratch your head a little.
Totally.
If you're not careful. But Dr. Oswalt actually has a really compelling explanation.
Okay. I'm all ears.
He points out that the tabernacle, when it's finally constructed,
it essentially takes over the function of the Tent of Meeting.
So it's not really a contradiction.
Not really.
It's more like a, what do you call it, a preview of coming attractions.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
The real focus is on the continuity of purpose between those two structures.
Yeah.
They both serve as designated spaces where God chooses to meet with his people.
I love that.
It's a reminder that it's not about the physical location, you know?
Right.
It's about the spiritual reality of seeking God's presence.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I love how Dr. Oswalt brings all of this to life with a story about a paramount chieftain who encounters prayer for the very first time.
Oh, yeah. What a great story.
This chieftain had never seen anything like it, and he was completely captivated by the raw and intimate connection that this person had with God.
It's such a beautiful illustration of the transformative power of genuine communion with God.
It is.
And you know what's particularly striking about that anecdote?
What?
it wasn't just the person praying who was affected.
Right.
It was everyone who witnessed it.
That's true.
They were all drawn in by this palpable sense of God's presence.
That's so powerful.
It sparked something in them, a longing for that same kind of intimacy.
Yeah, I get that. It reminds me of something we talked about earlier, you know, how God's presence isn't meant to be a solo experience.
Exactly.
It's designed to ripple outward and impact a whole community around us.
Absolutely. And that actually brings us to a really pivotal moment in the story where Moses truly steps into his role as intercessor.
Okay.
He pleads with God to go with the Israelites.
Right.
And he argues that it's God's presence, not their merit,
yeah,
that sets them apart from everyone else.
And it's so powerful how he keeps saying, your people, not my people. Yeah. It's like he's intentionally placing their fate in God's hands.
Yeah,
what else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth?
Wow.
What a powerful statement.
It is. It really is a profound declaration of dependence.
Right.
You know, Moses recognizes that without God,
yeah,
their journey is completely pointless. They're just another group of wanderers in the wilderness.
Right.
But with God,
yeah,
they become something extraordinary.
Yeah.
They become his people.
It's a distinction that should be evident in their lives, don't you think?
Oh,
absolutely.
Not just in their words,
right.
But in everything they do, their actions, their values, their very being.
I think so, too. It's about a transformed life, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really gets you thinking about what it means to be set apart.
It does.
It's like it's not about outward appearances, right?
Right.
Or just empty rituals.
No.
It's about a heart that's been truly transformed by God's presence.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got Moses wrestling with this tension, you know, between God's promise,
yeah,
and his reluctance to journey with these rebellious people. It's almost, yeah, as if he's trying to, like, really grasp the depths of God's character.
Hmm. Yeah, and that leads us to this incredible moment.
Yeah.
Where Moses actually asks to see God's glory.
Oh, wow.
But God, knowing how limited humans are,
yeah,
replies that no one can actually see his face and live.
Whoa.
So instead, he offers to reveal his goodness and his character to Moses.
It's like God saying, okay, you can't quite handle the full force of my glory just yet.
Right.
But I can give you a glimpse of my heart.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
And what God reveals is so powerful.
It is.
He talks about his compassion, his grace, his slowness to anger.
Yeah.
His abundance of love and faithfulness, mm-hmm, forgiveness and justice.
The maze.
These aren't just, you know, random qualities.
No, they're not.
They're absolutely essential to his very identity.
Right. Dr. Oswald really emphasizes how these attributes are repeated over and over throughout the Old Testament.
Yeah.
They're like the foundation of who God is.
It's interesting. Sometimes I think we get so caught up in the rules and regulations of the Old Testament.
I know, right?
That we miss the heart behind it all.
Totally.
But here God is laying it all out.
He is.
He's saying, this is who I am. This is what I'm about.
Yes. And it's in this context of God's revealed character.
Yeah.
That we come across that often misunderstood verse,
yeah,
about God punishing sin.
Oh, yeah.
To the third and fourth generation.
It's tough for
it me. It can be. It's easy to read that and think, wait a minute, what about grace? What about forgiveness?
Right. It sounds like God is holding grudges and punishing people for their ancestors' mistakes.
Yeah.
How does that fit with this God of love and mercy that we see here?
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
And it's where Dr. Oswald's insights are so valuable.
Okay.
He argues that this verse isn't actually about some kind of arbitrary punishment, but it's about acknowledging the lasting consequences of sin.
Even when forgiveness is given.
Even when forgiveness is given. Exactly.
So it's not that God is going after innocent people for their grandparents' mistakes.
No, not at all.
Okay.
It's more about recognizing that our lives are interconnected.
Right.
And that actions really do have consequences.
Yeah.
Think about it. You know, if someone makes choices that lead them down a path of addiction,
right,
or abuse, well, the people closest to them are going to bear the scars of that.
They do.
Even generations later.
That's true.
It's not about God inflicting pain.
Right.
It's about the very nature of sin.
Okay.
How it creates brokenness and dysfunction that ripples through families and communities.
It's a sobering thought.
It is.
But it makes sense.
It does.
It's kind of like those nature documentaries,
yeah,
where they talk about how one small change in an ecosystem,
right,
can trigger a whole cascade of effects.
Exactly. We might not always see the full impact of our choices right away.
No.
But they do have these ripple effects.
They do. Okay, so after Moses has this incredible revelation of God's character,
yeah,
he's like emboldened to intercede again.
He is. He asks God to forgive their sin
and to reaffirm his commitment to them.
To be their God, yeah.
Yes. And it's amazing what Dr. Oswald sees in this plea.
Okay, what's that?
He sees it as an act of atonement itself.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, it's not just a casual, hey God, sorry about that.
Right.
It's a heartfelt, spirit-led appeal.
Wow.
That comes from a deep understanding of God's nature.
So it's not just about saying sorry.
No.
It's about aligning yourself with God's heart.
Yeah.
Feeling the weight of the people's actions.
Uh-huh.
And standing in the gap for them.
Exactly. And get this. God responds with pure grace.
He does.
He renews the covenant with the Israelites just like that.
Unilaterally.
Unilaterally. There's no negotiating, no bargaining, no list of conditions.
It's amazing.
It's pure, undeserved favor.
It really speaks volumes about the nature of God's love, doesn't it?
It does.
It's not based on how good we are or what we deserve.
No.
It's a free gift.
Absolutely.
Given to us despite our failings.
That's like that line from Romans.
Oh, yeah.
While we were still sinners, Christ died for us.
Yes, that's it.
It's that same radical grace.
Extending to those who don't deserve it.
Exactly. And, you know, all of this points to the transformative power.
Yeah.
Of encountering God's presence.
Yeah.
And we see this transformation so vividly in the final scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where Moses' face becomes radiant after speaking with God.
Wait, hold on. His face actually glows.
Well, of course, it's symbolic.
Right. Okay.
But it's a powerful symbol.
Yeah, it is.
That radiant face represents what happens.
Yeah.
When we experience intimate communion with God. It's like God's glory shining through a visible sign of that inner transformation.
I love how Dr. Oswald connects this back to the New Testament.
Yes.
You know, the idea of believers being recognized as having been with Jesus.
It's that unmistakable mark.
Yeah.
Of having spent time in the presence of the divine.
It's true. I think we've all met people like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Those whose faces just seem to light up.
Yes.
When they talk about their faith.
Exactly. It's like they're carrying a little piece of heaven with them.
They are, and it's a beautiful reminder that genuine encounters with God, they leave a lasting mark.
They do.
Not just on our hearts, but on our very being, on how we face the world.
I think so, too. It raises a profound question.
What's that?
What would it mean for us to live with such a deep awareness of God's presence that it actually transforms us from the inside out?
That's a powerful thought, one that we should all be considering, I think.
I agree.
It really is. It's like, you know, we talk about God's grace changing us.
Yeah.
But it's also like he's taking us to school.
It is.
But in this divine way, you know what I mean?
I do. And it's a school that we all attend in some way, I think.
Right.
You know, the spiritual journey is often full of these seasons of like longing.
Yeah.
Times when we feel God's presence really strongly and times when it feels more distant.
Right, right.
But as Dr. Oswald points out,
yeah,
it's often in those moments when we feel like God is absent that we actually grow the most.
Interesting.
You know, we develop this deeper hunger for him.
Yeah. But those times can be so tough, can't they?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like being in a spiritual desert. You're just parched and longing for a glimpse of an oasis.
I know. It's so easy to get discouraged during those times.
Yeah.
And to wonder if God is even there.
Right.
But honestly, those are the times that really refine our character.
Okay.
They strip away our self-reliance.
Yeah.
And make us more dependent on God.
I see that. Yeah.
I mean, think about it. The Israelites wandered in the wilderness for 40 years.
40 years.
40 years. That's a long time to be in a spiritual boot camp.
It makes you wonder what they learned during all that time.
It does, doesn't it?
What lessons they had to unlearn, you know?
Yeah.
What new ways of seeing God they had to embrace.
Exactly. And maybe that's the real lesson for us today.
What's that?
The journey of faith. It's not about avoiding the hard parts.
Mm-hmm.
It's about realizing that even in those difficult times, God is still there working in us.
He is.
Shaping us into the people he's calling us to be.
It's about the journey, not just the destination.
Yes. It's in those times when we're wrestling and questioning and longing that our trust grows deeper. Our vision becomes clearer.
Yeah.
And our hearts are truly transformed.
Wow. This has been such an incredible deep dive.
It has.
I don't know about you, but I'm feeling challenged and encouraged all at the same time.
Me too.
What stands out to you most from all of this?
I think for me, it's that powerful reminder that God's presence is a gift.
Yes.
It's not something we can just take for granted.
Right.
It's something to be treasured.
Yeah.
To be stewarded with reverence and responsibility.
Absolutely. And it's in those encounters with his presence.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of our mistakes
right.
that we experience true transformation.
Yeah. That same radiance that Moses had.
You know, we often focus on those big dramatic events of the Exodus.
I know, right? Like the parting of the Red Sea.
Exactly. But it's these quieter moments, the times when we're wrestling with God,
yeah.
seeking his presence, really trying to understand his character.
It's those times that truly shape us.
It makes you think, where in your own life are you yearning for that deeper connection with God?
It does, doesn't it? And how would that change you? How would it affect your relationships or your outlook on the world? What are those ornaments that you might need to let go of?
Those are great questions for us all to consider. And as always, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep into the Word. There's always more to discover. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Exodus, everyone. We'll see you next time.